Shalom, welcome to ASJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I want to speak about the kidnapping of the three Jewish teenagers by the Hamas terrorists from a somewhat different perspective. You know, when that kidnapping took place a little bit over 2 weeks ago, it created a new awakening among most Israeli Jews. Many Israeli Jews went to say prayers for the three kidnapped Israeli teenagers, suddenly began to question the policies of the government in releasing Muslim terrorists, began to promise that they were going to do all types of things, give to charity and other things, to ask God to save these three Jewish teenagers. It really brought out the best in a substantial number of Israeli Jews. But that's the ordinary rank-and-file Jews. The Jewish establishment, the Jewish politicians, nothing has changed. They're the same evil, rotten garbage that they always were. The self-hating, anti-Semitic Israeli media, nothing has really changed. They all claim to be very moved by this, but the same policies of appeasement and supporting our enemies and self-hating behavior, the same policies are still being pursued. You remember when we had the 9/11 attacks in the United States, those of you who are old enough to remember, in 2001, 13 years ago, all of a sudden, huge numbers of Americans were flying American flags and feeling a new sense of patriotism and solidarity and a new pride in their country. That was a great opportunity. 9/11 was an opportunity. It was a terrible tragedy. 3,000 Americans were brutally murdered by Muslim terrorists. It was a terrible tragedy. But at the same time, there was an opportunity to awaken the American people, to bring out the best in the American people, to create a new awareness of the threat of Islamic terrorism and take the effective action that had to be taken. There was an opportunity there, which was lost, of course. We lost the opportunity because we had an evil president, George W. Bush, and an evil news media, and all the politicians, all the leaders were all evil. And there was no one to guide and inspire the American people at a time when they wanted to be inspired, at a time when they wanted to reach higher and not be selfish and not be apathetic and wanted to do something. So the 9/11 tragedy was an opportunity that was lost to change America, to wake America up, to finally shake America out of its apathetic, pathetic drive to self-destruction. It was a lost chance. The same thing has happened many times over the years for Israel. There have been all types of opportunities for the Jewish people to wake up in Israel. The 1948 War of Independence, the 1956 War to Liberate the Sinai, the 1967 Six-Day War, the 1973 Yom Kippur War. There were numerous opportunities when Rabbi Meir Kahana, our great leader, was in the Knesset. There were endless opportunities to wake the Jewish people up. But because we never had the funds to reach people on a regular basis and be a mass movement and really, really deliver our message continuously so that we could change the mentality of Jews at a time when we had a chance. All of these events gave us a chance to, gave whoever would try to change the mentality of Jews an opportunity to do so. Either there was nobody there to do so, like in the Six-Day War, there were no Jewish leaders that were worthy of the name Jewish leader. Israel won that miraculous victory despite the Jews and despite the Jewish leaders. And that was true through almost all of these opportunities, these lost opportunities over the years. When Rabbi Kahana was in the Knesset, we did have a chance, but that was drowned out by a news media and all the politicians and all the parties and everybody ganging up on poor Rabbi Kahana, who had his one seat in the Knesset and who didn't have the money to fight back. That was the problem. So we had all these lost opportunities over the years, opportunities to create a great Jewish people, a light unto the nations, a holy nation, a nation of priests, a nation that would sacrifice, a nation that was patriotic and committed to doing good in the world. That's the type of Israel that we can still create if only we seize the opportunity, if only we could reach the people of Israel on a regular basis with our message. We can't just reach them for 30 seconds or reach them with one video and expect to change their whole life or their whole outlook. We've got to reach them on a regular basis. We have to have them as our audience on a regular basis and change their thinking and their mentality and educate them. That's a process that we have to do. We have to change thousands of years of galut mentality, of the mentality of the exile. And the kidnapping of these three teenagers has been another period in Israel's history, another example, where there was a sudden temporary unity among the Jews of Israel. And an awakening among many Jews in Israel, many non-religious Jews started saying prayers for these three kids. The hearts of many Jews in Israel went out to the families of these three kidnapped victims. When they saw the mothers, the brave mothers of these three teenage kids, not saying, we want free all the terrorists to get our sons back at any price. No, the three brave mothers said, please pray for our sons, and we're against releasing any Arab terrorists. We're against this. We're against deals like this. This has to stop. The people of Israel, their hearts went out to these brave Jewish families. And when they saw the suffering of the mothers, brave but they still were, of course, suffering with their sons in captivity, and who knows what's happening to them, and who knows if they're still alive. God willing, let's hope they're still alive. Many people's hearts were broken thinking about this, and many people still, they have this on their mind, these three kids and their families. When Jews love their fellow Jews, and when Jews want to say prayers and want to do good things and want to be patriotic and want to fight for their country and love their people, love their brothers and sisters, that is what brings out the best in the Jewish people. That's when the Jews become a light unto the nations and a holy nation and a nation of priests, when they become an example for all nations. That is what could turn the Jews into the people that they have to be in order to bring redemption to the world. And we've had a chance in the past 2 weeks to bring the best out in the Jewish people, but it's another lost opportunity because no one reaches them on a massive scale on a regular basis with the message. No one. They still have the same evil news media. They still have the same evil leaders. They still have the same Israeli army rounding up Hamas terrorists and temporarily arresting Hamas terrorists instead of killing the Hamas terrorists. These are Hamas terrorist murderers that are walking freely throughout Israel, and all the other Arab terrorists who have so much Jewish blood on their hands, and they walk freely around Israel. And so they temporarily round them up and arrest them to question them, and that's supposed to be an example of tough behavior. What a joke. We had a chance here, a brief chance here, to wake the people of Israel up, to say that there is a different way, to say if you gave us a chance, if you gave us, the Kahanis, a chance, yes, we could do great things. But because we're not a mass movement, and when I say we, I mean JTF. And because we don't have the budget that's needed, the opportunity again is lost. And I hope there's a miracle that wakes the Jews up, but right now it looks like the opportunity again is being lost, and we're still with the same basic, evil, disgusting policies. And Jews, although they're looking for some answer, they have no idea. They don't have a clue as to what the real answer should be, because we're not there to give them the clue and to give them more than a clue, to tell them outright what should be done and explain and persuade and tell them all your thinking has been wrong and all your leaders have lied to you and the news media has lied to you and everybody's lied to you and the generals in the army have lied to you. They've all lied to you. Our enemies want to destroy us, and we should get rid of our enemies, get them out of the land of Israel, and we should kill the Arab terrorists. And we should never free Arab terrorists. And we should have a Jewish state with Jewish education and Jewish values. But no one's there to give them that message. Because we're not there to give them that message. We're the only ones that would. And so, here we are. I've got some good news. You've been hearing it every week since March, since we started our advertising campaign on our Hebrew Facebook page. We had 1,830 likes or members. Likes are, in effect, members on Facebook. We had 1,830 likes or members in mid-March. Now the end of June, 3.5 months later. We have 11,215 likes the last time I checked. 11,215. We went from 1,830 to over 11,200. Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. Thank God, thank God, thank God. And so we are reaching our segment of Israeli Jews. Those 11,000 plus, those are Israeli Jews. And so we're reaching a segment of Israeli Jews out of the 6 million Jews who live in Israel. But obviously we have to reach far more. At this rate, we should, if we continue at this rate, I don't know if we will, but if we continue at this rate, we should have 30, 40, 50,000 people in a year or so. And we should, and in a couple of years, in another 2 years, we could have as many as 100,000. We could reach at this pace in the next 2 years, in a couple of years, we could reach 100,000 members. That would make us a major force. But until we get there, look at all the terrible things that happen. Look at all the lost opportunities. So we're racing to reach people as quickly as possible and to make a difference as quickly as possible. Because the people of Israel need us and need our message so desperately. They don't even know that we're the ones that they need. Our message is the message they need. They don't even know that. They don't know it yet. But you, our great JTFers, do know that. You understand that with this type of message, we could save Israel from terrible tragedies, and we could create the Israel that has to be created in order for us to fulfill the destiny of Israel and the Jewish people to be a light unto the nations and a holy nation and a nation of priests. And so help us. I hope this gives you an indication of just how much is at stake here. By the way, in the United States, they're hardly even giving any media coverage to the kidnapping of these three teenagers, which is such a huge event in Israel, obviously. In America and in Europe and the rest of the world, the Jew-hating news media, including the Jewish anti-Semites in the news media, deliberately are burying the story because it makes the Muslim terrorists look bad. This is the type of vicious Jew hatred that we're dealing with in the media. But if we were a mass movement, they couldn't bury the story. They couldn't bury the truth. The truth would rise to the surface and smack these evil people in the face like they deserve to be smacked. They deserve much worse than that. And so, help us. A lot is at stake. A lot is at stake. What a great opportunity we would have had if we had 100,000 people now. Or more. Instead of 11,000. Who knows what a historic difference that would make for Israel? Who knows what we could be doing right now? I mean, the possibilities are endless. I think we would be changing the whole dynamics of the situation. I think the debate would definitely change. And the parameters of the debate and what people would be saying would change. And a lot of people would be waking up and a lot of people would be coming to us and asking us for our solutions. It would be a whole new day in Israel. And if there's a whole new day in Israel, there's a whole new day for the world. Because I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee. The blessings of all the nations of the world are dependent upon what happens to little Israel. And the opposite is also true. When bad things happen, it's because of events that occur in little Israel. And so, a lot is at stake. A lot is at stake. And you are part of the movement that offers hope. You really are part of the movement where the action is. And so there are four things we ask you to do every week, and I'm going to run through them again quickly. Number one, please pray for us. Pray for our success. Pray that we reach the people of Israel. Pray that the three Jewish teenagers, of course, are returned safely to their families without any terrible deals to free terrorists or anything like that, God forbid. Pray. Pray for us and pray for Israel to wake up. That's the first thing. Second thing. When we put up videos in Hebrew and in English on our forum or on our Facebook pages, please like and share those videos on Facebook. That boosts the videos in the Facebook search engine. And please like, favorite, comment, and mirror the videos on YouTube. That boosts the videos on the YouTube search engine. And when something's boosted in the YouTube or the Facebook search engines, that boosts it on the Google search engines and the other internet search engines, the general internet search engines. That's the third. So the second thing is help us promote the videos with liking and sharing and favoriting. And the third thing, please post good posts, good threads on our Facebook pages and on our forum so that people will want to join us and become active with us. If we have good threads and good posts, it makes us a movement that's attractive so people want to get involved with us. Our English language movement now is actually much smaller than the Hebrew language movement. Thank God the Hebrew language movement, because of the Hebrew Facebook page, is becoming a big movement. Thank God. But the English language movement is essential. First of all, the English language movement supports and finances the Hebrew language movement. It's essential to the Hebrew language movement. And of course, it's also important that we reach people in the United States with this message, Jews and righteous Gentiles in the United States and around the world. That's also important. So help us with good threads and good posts on the Facebook pages and on the forum. Very important. And the fourth and final thing, of course, obviously, I think we all know how important it is that we receive as much financial support as possible. You can see with your own eyes the changing numbers every day. Baruch Hashem on our Hebrew Facebook page. You have a chance to be part of that. Your checks, your money orders, your cash donations can make you a part of that. Don't you want to help reach God's people in the land of Israel with this truth, with this message? Don't you want to be a part of that? Don't you want the zchut, the merit of being a part of that? You have a chance to do that. God bless the great JTFers who do send us checks and money orders and cash donations on a regular basis, who send it to our post office box. God bless them. Every check, every money order, every cash donation makes a real difference here. You can see it with your own eyes every day by just looking at our numbers on our Hebrew page. When you see me do the shows and I give you, last week it was 10,000 something, this week it's 11,000 plus. 11,215 likes the last time I checked. Baruch Hashem, thank God. So help us financially. It's very, very important. It makes a big difference. And if you prefer helping us with your credit card online because it's more convenient than actually putting a check in the mail, if that's what you prefer doing, that's makes no difference. Either way is fine. It's the same, for us it's the same, whether we get a donation online or whether we get a donation in the mail. For us it makes no difference at all. You just go to the donate button on the Hebrew main page, hayamin.org. It's in English, the donate button on the top. And in a couple of minutes, in several minutes, you can make a donation and you can help the cause. I think you, our fellow JTFers, you really understand how important this is. what an important movement you're part of, and what a chance we have. We have a chance. I don't know in the end for sure what's going to happen, but we do have a real chance here of becoming big and of making a difference. And we need every one of us to do everything they can to help. Again, God bless the great JTFers who are helping. God bless you. Your deeds are wonderful deeds. And may God bless you and your loved ones, your family, in this world and in the next, for all the good deeds that you do. All right, let's go now to the questions from our great JTFers. Let me just make sure everything's okay over here. Yep, this is fine, I think, God willing. And we start with the great Yemach Shmo Rejabnik, who writes, and I quote, "Kansas shooter Frazier Glenn Miller is Fed informant who handed over his fellow Nazis for light sentence. He once had sex with black gay prostitute," unquote. Very true. You know, this was the head of a Nazi. He formed a Nazi movement in North Carolina, and he was involved with the Nazis all over the country. And he decided to murder three people that he thought were Jewish. They were not, by the way. All three were not Jewish. But three people that he thought were Jewish because they were near the Jewish community center in Kansas, so he assumed they were Jewish. And he shouted Heil Hitler and shot them and murdered three innocent people in Kansas. And yes, this guy did get arrested and indicted, and in order to get a lighter sentence, he did rat on his fellow Nazis. He snitched on his fellow Nazis to get a lighter sentence. And he was caught having sex with a black gay prostitute, with a black male prostitute, in the back seat of a car. This is someone who's a Nazi who talks about how he's going to kill all the niggers and everything else, and here he is in the back seat of a car having sex with a black male prostitute. Can it get any sicker than this? What a story. What a sick story. Very, very true, Yemach Shmo Rejabnik. Very, very true. And now we go to the great Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Thoughts on these four people." And then we've got four people here. Let's go one by one. Leonard Nimoy. Leonard Nimoy. Am I saying it right? Nimoy? I think I'm saying it right. Leonard Nimoy, of course, is the Star Trek actor that I think we all know. I think most people know. Maybe young people today, I don't know. Do they know about Star Trek? I don't know. But he was the Star Trek actor, of course. He's 83 years old now. He grew up as a Yiddish-speaking Orthodox Jew. His parents were Yiddish-speaking Orthodox Jews from the Ukraine. But like almost all rich and famous Jews who make it in Hollywood, as far as I know, he did nothing for the Jewish people despite all of his tremendous fame. He had tremendous fame and wealth and everything else that comes with a career that he had in Hollywood. He was not only on Star Trek, he was in movies, he was on other television series and television programs. So he made a lot of money over the years and became a very, very famous person and could have used that to benefit the Jewish people, to benefit his people, to make this a better world. I don't know of anything that he did that we could say is a positive thing that he did. So, certainly not. I'm not impressed unless someone shows me something that would surprise me. And his good friend, the next Wandering Samurai then asks about the next person on the list, William Shatner, who was his good friend, who's also the Star Trek actor. He's also 83 years old, William Shatner. He intermarried several times. never did anything for the Jewish people. He's a piece of garbage as far as I'm concerned. I mean, this is a guy who made huge amounts of money, was very famous, could have done wonderful things for the world. What does he do? He goes and intermarries several times, never does one damn good thing for his people. I'm sorry, to me this is a piece of garbage. Because if I had what he had, do you know what I could be doing now to make this a better world? Do you know what I could do if I had those resources? And the next person that the Wandering Samurai asks about is Carrot Top. Carrot Top is a comedian. I don't know anything about him. So I'm sorry, Wandering Samurai. I know I've seen him on television, but I don't know anything about him other than that. So I just don't know what to, I don't know. I can't really comment on him because I don't know anything about him. And finally, Bill Cosby. Wandering Samurai asks about Bill Cosby, who is the black actor and comedian who really made a fortune, huge amount of money, was promoted by the Jews all his life, Jews in Hollywood, Jews on television, even though he's an anti-Semite. And yes, he is an anti-Semite. He attended a fundraiser for the Jew killer, David Dinkins, Yimach Shmo, who was the mayor of New York and who was responsible for the pogrom in which Yonkel Rosenbaum was stabbed to death by a black mob. And Dinkins, he held a fundraiser, when he was holding a fundraiser to get Dinkins reelected as mayor, Bill Cosby ridiculed religious Jews, made anti-Semitic cracks against the religious Jews. He criticizes black culture sometimes. He criticizes the filthiness of black culture. But he's still a left-wing Democrat. So, you know, he criticizes black culture, but supports the things that created that culture. He hasn't learned anything. So he's a Jew-hating, left-wing Democrat piece of garbage. And the fact that he occasionally criticizes black behavior, that doesn't impress me. I mean, you know, we could always use it and say, even Bill Cosby says that, you know, we'll use that sometimes, yes. But this is not exactly a saintly person. He's an anti-Semite, left-wing Democrat, very, very wealthy, very famous, very wealthy, and supports a lot of evil causes. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And we now go to our great friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, do you have any recent funny stories of something that happened to you on the New York City subway? Thanks, unquote. Funny stories on the subway. You know, last week, I always have funny stories. Well, I don't know if it's funny, but to me, they're not funny. But I was on the subway last week. And this big black woman comes and sits opposite. You know, you have the seats on the subway, and she sits opposite, directly opposite me on the subway. Big black woman with a huge butt. And she sits on the subway, and she says, I'm itching. Ooh, I be itching. And she pulls her pants down. She actually pulls her pants down and starts scratching her giant butt on the subway. And by the way, you know, if you travel the subway, some people think when I tell people these stories, some people think, oh, all these things that Chaim speaks about, that really happened. If you travel the subway on a regular basis, you'll see much, much more. You'll see much crazier things than anything I ever discussed on AskJTF. This is nothing. This is nothing. These things happen on the subway a million times a day, all these crazy things. She pulls her pants down on the subway, literally pulls her pants down, and exposes her bare giant butt to everybody on the subway and starts scratching her behind. And says, oh, I don't care, it itch. And when it itch, I'm going to scratch. I don't care what people think. I don't care if people don't like it. I'm going to scratch when it itch. When it be itching, I'm going to be scratching. Yeah. I mean, just unbelievable. Unbelievable. But this is nothing. This is an average run of your mill. If I had a dollar for every crazy thing I've seen on the subway, I would be Bill Gates. And think of what I could do for Israel. Anyway, thank you, Joe Gutfeld. And we move on now to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, one, do you think Ashkenazim have suffered more than Sfaradim in Galut? Unquote. Galut meaning the exile. Probably. When you consider the pogroms and the crusades, the Sfaradim suffered the Inquisition. My family in Spain suffered the Inquisition. And the Sfaradim in Spain, Portugal, Italy, even Brazil, there was an Inquisition even in Brazil. So they suffered tremendously under the Inquisition. But I think when you consider the totality of what the Ashkenazi Jews suffered, the mass murder and constant attacks and constant pogroms and constant persecution, constant expulsions, culminating in the Holocaust, where at least 95% of the Jews who were murdered in the Holocaust were Ashkenazim, maybe more than 95%. I mean, the Jews in Greece, you had some Sephardic Jews in Greece. The Jews in Greece were murdered, of course, the Jews from Salonika. But I would say more than 95% of the Jews who were murdered in the Holocaust were Ashkenazim. So I think overall, yes, the Sephardim also suffered tremendous persecution and pogrom, and there were also pogroms, and there were also blood libels and other terrible things, but I think the Ashkenazim had it even worse. Dr. Dan now writes, and I quote, two, comment on Spain-Portugal right of return, unquote. Spain and Portugal suddenly tell the Jews, whom they murdered and expelled and burned at the stake 500 years ago, saying you have to become Catholic or we're going to burn you at the stake and murder you, and they did murder thousands of Jews. Most of the Jews fled. But they murdered thousands of Jews, burned them at the stake, tortured them in the dungeons of the Grand Inquisition. And since then, have spent centuries being the most vicious anti-Semitic countries. Now they suddenly say, because their economies are collapsing, oh, Jews can come here and move here. Of course, they want the Jews to move there with the successful Jews with their brains and their ability to do things to boost the economy and technological brain power. Of course, they want that. They want the Jews there because they're desperate and their economies are collapsing. Spain and Portugal, they don't have a recession; they have a depression. The unemployment rate in Spain is like 25%, 25-30%, which was the peak of the unemployment rate during the Great Depression in the United States in the 1930s. Their economies are literally collapsing. Their societies are collapsing. So now they decide to say, if you were a Jew of Spanish or Portuguese origin, you can come back and become a citizen here. Huh, big deal. Of course, they haven't changed their anti-Israel policies. They're still Jew-hating scum. Their anti-Israel policies are the same anti-Israel policies they've always had. Boycotting Israel, condemning Israel, supporting the Arab terrorists, supporting the destruction of Israel, demanding that Israel commit national suicide. Those are still their policies. Nothing has really changed. They just want to exploit Jewish brain power. Any Jew who goes there is really committing a terrible sin. And now Dr. Dan writes, three, comment on Dershowitz-Kahana debate, unquote. that was a classic. That was fantastic. The debate between the attorney Alan Dershowitz, who once said that he would have gotten Adolf Hitler off, he would have represented Adolf Hitler and gotten him acquitted. That's the type of Jew Dershowitz is. Debating the great Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo, who was the greatest Jewish leader in modern history. It was classic. It was fantastic. And you really see the greatness of the rabbi's mind, the sharpness and brilliance of his mind and his arguments. It was really a wonderful debate. I'm glad that at least Dershowitz debated Rabbi Kahana. That was one good thing he did, that enabled us to see the greatness of our rabbi and maybe introduce the rabbi's greatness to other people. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And we now go to our great friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "Is the Jewish version of heaven and hell the same as the Christians?" Unquote. No, I don't think so, because the Christians believe that heaven and hell are physical places separate, or maybe they're spiritual, physical, I don't know. But they seem pretty physical in the description in the book of Revelations and in the Christian Bible. That they're separated from this world. Whereas the Jewish view, there is a Jewish view of where the souls of people go after they die. Your soul can go to Gan Eden, which is the which means literally paradise, or the Garden of Eden, or can go to Gehinnom, which is hell. Yes, there is a Jewish view of that. But the Jewish view is not necessarily the same view as the Christian view. For instance, the world to come, the next world, paradise, the world to come will be this world. The dead will be resurrected. There's going to be Techiyat HaMetim, and the dead are going to be resurrected and going to live in this world. Except that this world will be a new corrected world, a different world. Now you may say, well, why, when you have the spiritual world, would the Jews want to return to their bodies? Because part of the concept of Judaism is we want to bring holiness and greatness into the physical world as well, into this world as well. That's part of the challenge of Tikkun HaOlam, of correcting the world. This world is deliberately made with problems and imperfections, and we're one of our callings in this world is to correct those problems and imperfections. When I say our callings, I'm not referring to Jews, I'm referring to all human beings, Jews and Gentiles, have to work to make this a better world, have to work to correct the world. I, from what I've read, from what I've seen in the book of Revelations and other parts of the Christian Bible, I've seen a different view of what will happen. The Christians believing that the people who are righteous will spend eternity in heaven, and the other people will spend eternity in hell, and the hell is literally a burning fire. That's what I've seen. Maybe my interpretation is wrong. I don't know. I'm not a Christian, so I really don't have a right to tell Christians what their beliefs are, and I hope I'm not offending anybody by saying what I think I've read. But I think there's a different view from the Jewish view. The Jewish view, again, is that there's going to be resurrection of the dead in this world, and the next world will be this world, and we're going to perfect this world so that we have both the physical and the spiritual. Judaism wants both the physical and the spiritual. So will there eventually be a world where we rise and become go to a higher level than being limited by our bodies? Possibly. There are Jewish commentators that believe that possibly will occur. But again, the ultimate reward will come in this world when there's resurrection of the dead. That's the Jewish belief. As far as the punishment, we don't know what hell is like. We also don't know exactly what paradise for the people who pass away is like. We don't know that. One of the things that Harambam, Maimonides, teaches us, and this is classic Jewish belief, is that we don't know exactly what hell is like, what heaven is like. We don't know exactly because we've never been there. We don't know. We know that there is reward and there is punishment. That there's no doubt about. The righteous are rewarded, the wicked are punished. That there's no question about. There's no doubt about that. God is a just God. He's also a merciful God. There's no question about that. But how exactly all this works, that we don't know. We don't know until we go there, we don't know. Or until we're in that situation, we don't know. That's also a basic Jewish belief. You don't see a description of hell or a description of these things in the Jewish Bible. In the Tanakh, you don't see a description of this. What Christians refer to as the Old Testament. You don't see this described in the Jewish Bible. Because, although Jews believe, there's no question that Jews believe in this and that it's a part of Jewish belief. And it's hinted at, and there are I could explain to you how there's no question that it is a part of Jewish belief, and even biblically you can prove that it's part of Jewish belief. But explicitly saying you're going to burn, you know, it's a lake of fire, or it's this or that, that you don't see. And one of the reasons is because we believe that we have to live for this world. Yes, there's another world. Yes, there's reward in the next world, but we should be living for this world. For this world. We've got to first make this world better. And we've got to improve this world. And of course the next world is something that will come as a result. And there are many other reasons in Judaism. Another reason is should people do things because they want reward, or should they do it because it's the right thing to do? That's another Jewish question. In Judaism, if you are righteous because you want the reward, it's good that you're righteous. You're going to get your reward. That's very good. But it's not the highest level. There's a higher level than that. There's a higher level of idealism where you don't do it because of the reward, where you don't even think, that's not even what you're thinking about. You do it because it's the right thing to do, because you have a burning indignation and a desire to be moral and do the right thing. That's a higher level. You do it because you genuinely love God, not because you fear God, only because you fear God. Fearing God is good. But there's a higher level than fearing God, and that's actually genuinely loving God and genuinely wanting to please God. And wanting to do God's will. And loving your fellow human beings and wanting to do good things to make this a better world. That's the highest level. The idealistic level. The selfless level. Doing good, not for the sake of reward and punishment, even though you know there is reward and punishment, but not for the sake of reward and punishment. Doing it really for the idealistic reasons. That's a higher level. And so, that's the reason why the Jewish Tanakh, the Jewish Bible, does not spend a lot of time dwelling on the rewards of the next world, but only speaks about what we face in this, but speaks primarily about this world. I hope that clarifies things to a certain degree, Chicago Jew. And now we go to the great Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks. And Lewinsky Stinks, I hope I didn't distort the Christian belief here. I hope I didn't distort any Christian belief. I'm not a Christian, and you know, I hope I didn't distort it, but I know Christians also believe in reward and punishment, and I know they also believe in the next world, and I hope I didn't distort what the Christian belief is. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, and I quote, "If Jim Jong-un were torturing sodomites and Quran rats to death in his extermination camps instead of Christians, would the world ignore it?" Unquote. Of course not. Of course not. The news media hates Christians. They hate Jews and they hate Christians. Because Jews and Christians represent the Bible and morals and God to the news media. So they hate them. So of course the media has a bias against Christians. When I say they have a bias against Christians, especially evangelical Christians, because evangelical Christians are pro-Israel, the media hates that. Oh, they can't stand that. But if something bad is being done to homosexuals or Muslims, then the media goes crazy. There's no question about that. The only time you're allowed to do anything bad to Muslims is if you're a Muslim. When Muslims massacre other Muslims, the world doesn't care. But if a non-Muslim does anything to a Muslim, even if it's in self-defense, everybody goes crazy. That's the way it works. Those are the rules. Those are the rules of those are the rules of the game. That's how it works. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And we now go to the great Dan Ben Noach, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what do you think of Glenn Beck requesting charity for hungry illegal kids in unsanitary border facilities?" Unquote. I think it's just insane. Just insane. I like Glenn Beck's support for the Jewish people in Israel, and he does genuinely support the Jews in Israel, but he sometimes does things which make me wonder. Why would we want to make things easier for illegal aliens, including the kids? I mean, you know, I don't hate children. But if we're going to be nice to illegal aliens who come here, if we're going to treat them nicely, more of them are going to come here. This country becomes a magnet for them. And they will destroy America. The third world people who are coming to the United States do not have the same culture as the American people, as the traditional culture of America. They will turn America into a third world banana republic, and this country's finished if that happens. All of the illegal aliens have to be thrown out of the country, have to be shipped back and deported. And not in a nice way. They should be deported. Just thrown out. That is what has to happen. And people who employ illegal aliens should face fines and even imprisonment. And there should be soldiers placed on the border with shoot-to-kill orders. If someone tries to come into the country illegally, that's like it. That's an invasion of the country. You're being invaded. You have a right to defend yourself. People have a right to defend themselves. And the reason you have all these illegal alien children coming in now is because Barack Hussein Obama deliberately encouraged this. He deliberately signed an executive order legalizing many categories of underage illegal aliens or illegal aliens whose parents came here, the children of illegal aliens. And so this has encouraged an avalanche of illegal alien children crossing the border without adults, just by themselves. We can't have a situation like this. The country is finished. The United States is finished. Unless we finally have leaders that get control of the borders and that throw the illegals out. That's the only chance the country has. And I know no one is advocating doing that now. Even Ted Cruz, who was my favorite candidate, isn't saying deport all the illegal aliens, but at least he's against amnesty, and at least he says secure the border. So he's the best we got right now. But if Chaim Ben Pesach were in charge, I think you all know what would happen. We would throw them all out. They're here illegally. They have no right to be here. They should be returned to where they came from. And raising money for them and helping them to make them more comfortable here, that's insanity. Insanity. Thank you, Dan. And by the way, Dan, thank you and God bless you. You know, Dan does so much for us on our English Facebook page. Whenever we have videos, he does so much. Of course, he's done so much over the years. He does so much. Our English Facebook page is actually growing every week now because of Dan Ben-Noach. I think it's primarily because of Dan Ben-Noach, because he publicizes us all over the place. And that is leading to growth also on the English Facebook page. Of course, we're not doing paid advertising, so it's not going to be on the same level as the Hebrew page. We're not going to grow at the same rate as the Hebrew page. But there's growth there. There's growth and there's activity, and that's primarily because Dan Ben-Noach is just like a one-man army. And it's really, God bless Dan Ben-Noach. He is really an example of what one person can do. And now we go to the great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "One, please comment on the ambassador flying the fag flag along with the American flag at the U.S. Embassy in Tel Aviv in celebration of the fag parade," unquote. You know, think about this for a moment. Those who are too young to remember maybe won't understand what I'm saying, but when I was a kid, there was no homosexual flag. And all the homosexuals were in the closet. There were some homosexual organizations in the 1960s, the early 70s, but even they all insisted they would never ask for homosexual marriage. They were not interested in anything like that. In fact, you know, in the 1960s, did you know that the homosexual organizations were saying that homosexuality is a mental illness because they wanted pity and sympathy rather than being arrested, because at that time it was a criminal offense in all 50 states. So to avoid going to prison, they would say it's like a mental illness, like being an alcoholic or a drug addict. They were saying this. That's the atmosphere that existed in the 60s and 70s when America was still a little normal, just slightly normal. We had a slightly normal country still. And that was in the 60s and 70s, which was the, you know, age of what they called the sexual revolution, and all types of crazy things were happening, and people were using drugs and experimenting with drugs. I mean, those were pretty radical days, and still, you didn't have anything like this. 5 years ago, Obama and Hillary Clinton and the Liberal Democrats were against gay marriage. 5 years ago. Look what we've come to. Can you imagine how the veterans who fought in World War II would react if they knew that the American flag that they fought and shed their blood for, that next to the American flag is being flown a flag of perversion and abomination? Can you imagine how they would feel? Look what we've come to as a society. Everywhere they go, they jam this down our throats. Everywhere they go. It's just sickening. And now in the Holy Land, pushing this agenda. God help us. I hope we become a mass movement so that because we will protest and we will fight back and we will resist this if we become a mass movement. God help us. And now Binyamin writes, and I quote too, "Who do you predict will be the next prime minister of Israel when Bibi leaves office? Will there ever be a Labor prime minister again?" There's always a possibility that Labor will again take over. Of course that's possible. Is Likud really that much better than Labor? Is there really a difference? In many ways, Likud is worse. In many ways. Bibi, when he leaves office, there are many possibilities. One is the Interior Minister, Gideon Sa'ar. Another is the Defense Minister, Moshe Ya'alon. There are a number of possible people who could take over. The other one is the head of the Labor Party, Herzog. He's a possibility. All of the possibilities are terrible. All of them are terrible people. And Israel and the Jewish people have a lot to be afraid of. They have a lot to be deeply concerned about. Let's just hope and pray that we get big and strong in time to make a difference and save the Jews from themselves. Let's hope we get big and strong enough, fast enough, God willing. Thank you, Binyamin. And we now go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "If the situation arises, do you think Israel should help Jordan against ISIL and have Jordan as a buffer against them moving towards Israel afterward?" Unquote. No. Jordan is not better, and there are no moderate Arabs. Certainly not. The Jordanian media day and night, like the Egyptian media day and night, call for the extermination of the Jews, call for Nazi genocide against the Jewish people, and say, as soon as we're strong enough, we're going to attack Israel and we're going to be part of this campaign to exterminate Israel, and they mean it. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. In fact, if this group, if ISIL comes in and takes over Jordan, that might give Israel a chance to liberate Jordan. It might be good. Might be the best thing that could happen if that's on Israel's border. Then Israel can go in and liberate Jordan, because Jordan has no right. Jordan is an artificial country. Jordan is part of the land of Israel. Israel should defend her people and her borders and liberate her land whenever she gets the opportunity. If the Arabs attack, go after them, pursue them, liberate more Jewish land, and encourage the Arabs who live in those lands to leave. That is what Israel should be doing. Not protecting one group of Arabs from another group of Arabs and pretending that this group of Arabs is more moderate. The Arabs who pretend to be more moderate are more dangerous in most cases than the so-called extremists. They are more dangerous to Israel. Thank you, Tag Mechir. And we now go to our great friend EB22, who writes, and I quote, "What is your opinion of the following people? One, Megyn Kelly, Fox News Channel host," unquote. She wants ratings, and I don't like the Fox News Channel hosts. Sean Hannity, supposed to be the big conservative. As soon as the election was over between Obama and Romney, the 2012 presidential election, he announced that he had decided, after thinking about it, that we should support amnesty for the illegal aliens. Sean Hannity said that. That's the big conservative. That's the big super conservative. Bill O'Reilly is even worse. Megyn Kelly, she wants her ratings. She's part of it. I don't think she's not the worst person on television. She's not someone who I curse and hate. But she certainly is not the answer to America's problems. She's objective. She wants to be objective, fair and balanced. You decide. We shouldn't be fair and balanced. I mean, we should be fair, but we shouldn't be objective. We're right, and they're wrong. You don't be objective with people who want to exterminate you. You don't be objective with people who are beasts. You don't be objective with immoral people. You don't make a civil right out of a moral wrong. We shouldn't be objective. The true fair thing is to support the good people, the righteous people, the decent people, against the evil people. To be fair and balanced between the evil and the righteous, and between monsters and their victims. That's neither fair nor balanced. Again, I don't think Megyn Kelly is the worst person on television, but she is not the answer to our problems, and Fox News is not the answer to our problems. And secondly, EB asks about the Koch brothers. Yeah, these guys are worth $115 billion. They're among the richest people in the world. They're not Jewish, by the way. There's rumors on the internet and everywhere else that they're Jewish. They're not Jewish. They're not Jewish. But anyway, I think they support these libertarian causes and these think tanks, and they've created a whole new type of establishment. Again, I don't think they're the answer. They're not the answer. They're part of the establishment, part of the problem. Yes, they're Republicans, and they usually support the Republicans against the Democrats. But were we really in such great shape when George W. Bush and the Republicans were in the White House and controlled Congress? They were in the White House and they controlled Congress, and look what they did. Look at the policies. Look what it led to. We've got to have real conservatives and real change. Are the Koch brothers going to support Ted Cruz? If they supported Ted Cruz, I would be applauding them. But I don't think they're going to do that. If he becomes the Republican nominee, maybe then they'll support him. And then I'll say, okay, that's a positive thing. But that's what it takes to get support from these billionaires. EB22 now writes, Indiana Governor Mike Pence. Okay, Indiana Governor Mike Pence, everybody says he is a true conservative. He is, and he would be a great candidate for president, and all the conservative organizations, they like him, and the Tea Party people like him, and everybody likes him. There's only one problem. He came out with a plan that is for amnesty. It's his own plan. And he claims it's not amnesty, but it is amnesty. Everyone who's reviewed the plan says, come on, this is amnesty and everything but name. So, you know, is that the answer? If we're going to give amnesty to illegal aliens, the country will be overrun and that's the end of America. And then you're going to have Obamas and Clintons forever in the White House. Forever. It'll be like, you know what it'll be like? It'll be like trying to win, trying to get a conservative to win an election in New York or in California. It's impossible. They've taken over in New York and California. Impossible. Do we want all of America to become like New York and California? Then you can kiss this country goodbye. It's over when that happens. So, no, I don't like Mike Pence. I want someone that doesn't compromise, who's tough and doesn't compromise. Thank you, EB. And we now go to our great friend, Russian Leo 777, who writes, and I quote, "Is Michael Savage a self-hating Jew? He never mentions the fact that he's Jewish, but claims he believes in God. He also obviously copies JTF, unquote. He certainly does copy JTF. I mean, line for line. I mean, he says, for instance, Jewish Week, W-E-A-K, which was a line I always used on my shows that I made up. And he started using it on his shows. So there's no question he copies JTF. I mean, things that only I say. But that's the least of the problem with him. I wish everybody copied JTF, even if they don't give us credit. I wish they copied JTF. I wish they said the things we say. He copies JTF to say bad things. He, of course, is a self-hating Jew. He's a vicious Jewish anti-Semite. He attacks Israel all the time. He blames Israel for the problems in the Middle East. Then occasionally he'll say something that's pro-Israel when he's in the mood. But most of the time he attacks Israel. He even attacked Israel during the war against the Hezbollah terrorists in Lebanon, when even the European Union was supporting Israel. Even the UN didn't attack Israel when Hezbollah rockets were raining down on Israeli cities. But Mike Savage attacked Israel. Mike Savage condemned Israel. So did Ron Paul, by the way, the other anti-Semite. He is so sick. But when he thinks it's in his interest to say something pro-Israel because he has a lot of evangelical Christians in his audience, unfortunately, they shouldn't listen to him because he's an animal, then he'll say something pro-Israel. He knocks Obama all the time except when the election comes around. When it's time for Obama to run for election or re-election, he doesn't want to knock Obama anymore. He's so phony. He did everything he could to get Obama elected. He undermined when McCain and Sarah Palin were running against Obama. He attacked Sarah Palin day and night and said she's stupid and she's ignorant and she shouldn't run and he refuses to support them and won't vote for them. He demoralized millions of people who were conservatives who listened to his show. Demoralized them before that election and helped Obama get elected. And then in 2012, he did the same thing to Romney. In 2008, he said McCain is terrible and they're all terrible and Sarah Palin's terrible. Mitt Romney is the only Republican that we should be, after Mitt Romney already had lost the nomination, he said you should have supported Mitt Romney. Only a candidate with a full head of hair can get elected. Mitt Romney has a full head of hair, he said. John McCain is bald. He can never get elected. This is literally what he was saying. This is the great wisdom. He thinks he's so wise. This is the great, and all the idiots that listen to him, they think he's so wise. This is the great wisdom that came out of this moron's mouth. And then he said, Mitt Romney, he's the one. He could have won. He would have gotten elected. This is what he was saying in 2008 after Romney already lost the nomination. Then in 2012, when he got the candidate that he claimed he wanted in 2008, in 2012, Romney did get the nomination. He turned on Romney too and did everything he could to undermine Romney because he wanted Obama because he figures it's better for ratings. That may be one reason. Another reason, because I think he's a closet leftist. I think he's completely insincere. I really believe he's insincere. I could give you a million other examples of his insincerity. He's just a complete fraud. And the best thing that could happen for conservatives is if he was taken off the earth, or if he already dropped dead, God willing. Should only happen to him. What he wants to happen to his fellow Jews in Israel, what he's willing to do to his fellow Jews in Israel, should happen to him. And by the way, that's true for all the anti-Israel Jews. What they're willing to see happen to the Jews in Israel should happen to them. It should be on their head. Thank you, Russian Leo. And I want to thank all of our great JTFers for another program that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, Shalom.